We shall turn for a little to the portion we read now, the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 25. We may read from verse 10 just now, Acts 25, verse 10. Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar thou shalt go. I appeal unto Caesar. And this is the appeal of the apostle whose exhortations regarding the civil magistrate and those who have a God-given authority over us, here he is personally appealing to the civil authority, in fact, to the highest possible court that he could appeal to at the time. I appeal unto Caesar. Now, you and I know perfectly well that the apostle wasn't appealing to him because he was a godly ruler. And he wasn't appealing to him because he was an upright and a moral character. We know only too well the kind of lifestyle that the Caesars lived and the kind of idolatrous worship and practices they were engaged in. Nevertheless, the apostle appeals to him under the particular circumstances that we shall look briefly at because of his understanding of his office and because he recognized him as the minister of God appointed to do justice. Now, we may consider these just as, I suppose, a simple addendum to what we had said earlier today. To understand what the apostle is doing here, we have to see the circumstances as they have developed. It is a good chapter to read, if you have the time, the 23rd chapter of the Westminster Confession of Faith, and see there what the Westminster Divines said about the relationship between the church and the civil magistrate. But this case that Paul appeals over to Caesar, it begins earlier in the Acts, in the chapter 22, without going into all the details. Paul has been preaching, and the result of his preaching has been a tumult and a near riot. And in order to save Paul, the civil authorities have taken him and endeavored to discover what the rioting and what the tumult is all about. You will understand that even in Jerusalem, in Caesarea, wherever, they were all under Roman government. But having said that, the Jews had a legitimate government of their own, and they were permitted to exercise their own government and rule in ecclesiastical matters and in some instances civil matters as well when it was related to their own law. They had a legitimate place. The council, the Sanhedrin, was their court. Their law was applied by the Sanhedrin. But they also had a king, and he had a legitimate place. And we see here into the scene and into the scenario comes King Agrippa, and he is desiring to hear Paul and what he is accused of and so on. Now, we go back to chapter 22, and we read that previous to the verse 30 I was going to refer to it, Paul has been arrested, and the governor at the time, wanting to discover what Paul has done or what he is guilty of, requires him to be bound in order to be beaten. And you'll see in verse 24 of chapter 22, the chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know whereof they cried against him. And then whenever they bound Paul to beat him, and the Roman beating very often was so severe that a victim would die as a result of it. But when they had bound Paul, this is what he did. He said to the centurion in verse 25 that stood by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned?" And that put fear into the heart of the centurion. He goes to the chief captain and informs him, "This man that we bound, he's a Roman. And if Paul had professed to be a Roman citizen and it was discovered that he was lying, he would be immediately put to death." Paul here says, "I am a Roman citizen." Now, even when you think of that, what an advantage that gave the apostle throughout the whole Roman Empire. He's the chosen man to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And he can go everywhere with his status, not only that he is an apostle, a former Pharisee that has been converted, but he's actually a Roman citizen, as standing anywhere, a free man. He can go into any city, any village, any town, and there he has an immediate protection as a Roman citizen. But because, you see, the Romans, well, they were idolatrous, they didn't expect a Roman citizen to be preaching the gospel. They didn't expect a Roman citizen to be evangelizing the heathen. But here they discover they are confronted with a Roman citizen whom they have illegally bound, ready to beat him. And Paul asks the question, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman uncondemned? You haven't charged me, you haven't judged me, you haven't condemned me, and you bound me in order to scourge me." Now then, the chief captain knew that if this were ever to come to the ears of the higher powers, he was in serious trouble. And yet Paul, because I believe he was a Christian, he didn't press it any further. He was released, and then we're told in verse 30, on the morrow, because he would have known the certainty whereof he, that is Paul, was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priests and all their council to appear, and brought Paul down and set him before them. So here's the first stage of these legal meetings and Paul's having to stand in judgment. The first is before the Jewish council itself in the presence of the chief captain, because he wants to discover What is this all about? What is this man accused of? What has he done? Now, you will find that before Paul actually comes to Rome, he stands before three different rulers. He stands before Felix first, the governor of the Caesarea and so on. Then he has to stand before Festus, who takes over as the Roman consul, the Roman governor in his place. You go back to, go to chapter 24, and you read there, verse 25, as he, Paul, reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee." He hoped also that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came in Felix's room. Festus becomes the governor, taking over from Felix. So what does Felix do? What was convenient? Because he wanted to do the Jews a favor. He wanted to have their favor, because if they were quiet, they're at peace, he doesn't have any problem, then it's easy to govern them. But if he stirs up animosity among these Jews, and they knew from history how easily they were stirred up because they detested Roman authority and Roman dominance. And here we have Felix. He has served his time in office, and now Festus is to take over. So Felix, knowing this, what does he do? This is a difficult case. These are difficult people. I'll just leave it until Festus takes over. He can deal with it. It's a rather hot potato, so I will leave it for Festus, and he can handle it then. And Paul has to stand before Festus then and answer for himself. But the Jews are working behind the scenes, and they are trying to influence Festus in the same way that they did with Felix. And now Festus, he requires that the Jews that have been trying to get Paul to Jerusalem, they don't want him to be judged in Caesarea. They want him to Jerusalem. But then they will be able to judge him. And they will judge him according to their courts and their laws and so on. And the reason they wanted him in the first instance to Jerusalem was because certain zealots, 40 of them, had bound themselves by an oath that they would kill him on the way. But it was made known to Felix, and he protected him and preserved his life. But the Jews are not giving up, and they are still intending to destroy Paul. And so whenever Festus then is prepared to hear him and judge the case as best he can, we are told in verse 4 of Acts 25, Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart thither shortly. Still intended. No, Paul will appear before the court in Caesarea. There's no need to go to Jerusalem. Verse 6, when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting in the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. Here is Paul now appearing before the civil magistrate, before the representative of Roman justice. In verse 10, you see what Paul said. Then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat. Now, he wasn't before Caesar. But he says, I stand before Caesar's judgment seat. Why? Because both Felix and Festus represented the authority of Rome. They represented the justice that Rome prided itself in. This was an ungodly government. Caesars were ungodly. The representatives, governors, were ungodly. They couldn't even begin to understand the thinking and the minds of the Jews or the officers in the Sanhedrin, and they certainly couldn't understand Paul. But they believed firmly in justice. Although they could be bribed, as you see with Felix, to a degree, and also Festus. Now, in verse 7 then, when he sat in the judgment seat and commanded Paul to be brought. When he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood about and led many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. You can see how corrupt the church authorities, the ecclesiastical courts, had become. They were utterly corrupt. And Paul could see, there is no possibility of me getting justice before the Sanhedrin. If I am to be sent to Jerusalem, and I am to be judged by the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the officers in the courts of Jerusalem, the ecclesiastical powers that be, there is no hope of justice. And so he's quite prepared, because he's been brought by the Jews. They have sought to use the powers of Rome to bring about their own desired ends regarding Paul, you see. But Festus requires the Jews to bring charges, legitimate charges, against Paul. And so they brought these complaints. They led all kinds of complaints against Paul, which they couldn't prove. And Festus demands proof. Then we're told, verse 8, while he answered for himself. And notice what he says. Notice what Paul says. Neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, and then note, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. Note that. Nor yet against Caesar. Caesar represented a godless power and authority as far as Paul is concerned. Caesar is a heathen. Caesar is an idolater. Caesar is godless. Caesar's immoral. But the powers that be, as we noted earlier, they are ordained of God. And Paul is recognizing the office of Caesar. His right to rule, his right to govern, his right to enforce justice. And he says, I have not offended against Caesar, a godless regime, but I have abided by the laws of that regime. Paul was like Peter, the apostles. The only reason he would violate any law was if he was required to disobey God. And he says here, and this is one of the ways in which the church dishonors Christ. When you find and you see it, you know it, you're aware of it, people professing to be Christians. And then they say, but these are godless men. They don't know God. They don't know their Bible. They don't believe in God. They don't seek to please God. They're not interested in honoring God. Therefore, we don't treat them with respect. We don't give them any place. We don't have to obey them. We don't have to submit ourselves to their authority because they're godless. Now, there are lots of people around professing to be Christians. And that's their attitude. Here's the apostle, the great apostle of justification by faith, the great expositor of the doctrines of God's word. He didn't mince his words. He never condoned any kind of sin of any description. He exposed sin and he exposed sinners. But he says this, in my life, I have not sinned against the law of the Jews, or the law of Moses, nor against the temple, though they've accused me, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. I have been extremely careful to obey the laws of Caesar because he represents God himself. He's the servant of God bearing the sword, as we saw earlier, and he doesn't bear it in vain. And that's why Paul appeals to him. He may be a godless man. He may not know anything of Moses or the laws of Israel. But he's God's servant bearing the sword, and I appeal to him. Because I'm faced with such corruption. I am faced with the reality that in the ecclesiastical courts, in the professing church, I cannot expect to receive justice. So I appeal unto Caesar. Now you will see that Festus, willing in verse 9 to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me?" He's saying to Paul, "Well, I won't send you up to Jerusalem on your own. I won't put you into the hands of the Sanhedrin alone. Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem? It'll satisfy these Jews. And then they'll be able to put all these questions before you, bring these charges according to their laws and so on, and be judged there before me. I will be present and I will exercise Roman justice." Then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment. I stand at Caesar's judgment seat. I didn't choose to be here. But I have been brought here by a procedure and a course of action. And here I stand at Caesar's court." What represents? It's not the Supreme Court. It's not Caesar himself. But it is Caesar's court. And justice is to be done here according to the laws of Rome. Then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. I am here, and I've no desire to go to Jerusalem, and the civil authorities ought not to hand me over to this corrupt court in Jerusalem." And therefore, he says, "I appeal unto Caesar." If I'm not going to be tried here legitimately and receive justice here, then I appeal unto Caesar himself. "For if I be an offender," he's saying to Festus, "you know perfectly well, they brought all these charges. They haven't proven any of them. You can see yourself, Festus, that this is all a corrupt regime. And I appeal now to your court. And what does Paul go on to say? If I am an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. If you conceive, Festus, that these are trumped up charges, and you can see from what you've heard and listened, as a legitimate judge, as the servant of God, if you can see that I am being dealt in injustice, it is your duty to protect me, and therefore I appeal unto Caesar. And then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, you see, Festus probably was hoping, well, if I send him to Jerusalem, the Jews will kill him between here and Jerusalem, and I'll be relieved. But now that he has appealed to Caesar, well, that relieves him of his responsibility. It removes this terrible headache. What am I going to do? I can see the man as being, he's an honest man, he is not guilty of any crime, and yet I don't want to offend these Jews and have a big problem in my hands. What am I going to do? He appeals to Caesar. Now I'm relieved. He can go to Rome, and Caesar can take charge of this case. Festus said, hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar thou shalt go. You see the place that Paul gives to legitimate authority, even when it is heathen, godless authority. It is established by God, the powers that be are ordained of God, the offices are ordained of God. Whoever may occupy the office may be godless, but the powers that be are ordained of God, and Paul here legitimately appeals to that power that exists for justice. And you see, Paul then, as we see in the portion here, Herod, or Agrippa, he appears in the scene, verse 13, after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice, they came, and here's the third authority that he has to stand before, Felix, and then Festus, and now we have Agrippa the king, and he has come because of the new governor, Festus. He has come to pay his respects, and I suppose to welcome him into the area that he is to govern. And then Festus thinks, well, here's the king of the Jews. If anyone should know the law, and if anyone should be aware of what's happening in this controversy, it ought to be this King Agrippa. And so, without going into it, we have Paul being required then to appear before King Agrippa to again speak in his own defense. But when we look at what happens, he stands before Felix, he stands before Festus, he now stands before Agrippa the king, and he has appealed to Caesar. You go back to Acts 9, whenever Paul is converted, when the Lord appears to him, and when then the saints are afraid of Paul, but God sends his servant in chapter 9, Ananias, to Paul, to Saul of Tarsus. Why does he send him? In Acts 9, verse 15, the Lord said unto him, go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. And here is Paul 20 years later doing just that. He's standing before kings and governors, and he's having to defend himself. And as he endeavors to do that, so he speaks of the Lord's dealings with him, the converting work that he has experienced, and how he has been brought to serve the Lord. And in the chapter 25, at the end of it, Paul is now standing before Agrippa, and then Felix, or Festus rather, is hoping that Agrippa will be able to explain things. If Agrippa hears him, he'll understand the case, and he'll be able to tell me then how I may send a letter to Caesar. When I send this prisoner to Caesar, I'll be able to send a letter with all his accusations, with his crimes, so that Caesar can judge the case. And in verse 25, we read, when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, this is Festus, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing. Imagine sending a prisoner to Caesar, and I don't know why I'm sending him. I don't know what to charge him with. I don't know what his crimes are. I can't figure it out. It's a very embarrassing situation. How am I going to send him to Caesar? I don't know what to charge him with. And so he's hoping that Agrippa, the king, will understand what it's all about. Be able to, well, you know, Festus, you could charge him with this. You could tell Caesar he's guilty of this or he's been accused of that. I have no certain thing to write. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes led against him. Now you can see all these things are pointing in one direction: Roman justice. And Paul appeals as an apostle, as a servant of Christ. He appeals for justice to the powers that be. When he's faced with the powers in the ecclesiastical world being so corrupt. Now, you see it's becoming more and more apparent in our own generation. The Roman Catholic authorities for years and centuries were able to cover up the most brutal and wicked crimes of various forms, their immorality. They've been covering it up for years. And the church authorities have been proven to be utterly corrupt. And now the victims, what are they doing? They're appealing to the civil magistrate for justice that they have not been able to get, or that they have been unable to attain within the Roman Catholic Church. And you see the grounds for it. You see, for years and years, when people had a problem, they went to the priest, they went to the bishop, they would hope that there might be justice because the church courts would be the most honest courts that they could possibly imagine. These are the men of God. These are men who believe in God, who believe they're accountable to God. Well, surely if there's anyone's going to do what's right, it'll be them. But they didn't. And you can see then the appeal now to the civil court, which is perfectly scriptural. And that, the reason I simply focus on Paul's appealing to Caesar, is to further demonstrate the legitimacy of the powers that be that are ordained of God. It's the office and the power that is bound up with that office that is established by God. And the apostle, as a Christian, as a servant of God, he would not have worshipped with Caesar. He would not have ordinarily kept company with Caesar. But he says, nor yet against Caesar have I committed any offense. I have recognized the legitimate authority of the powers that be ordained of God. And I do believe that we need to keep that in view, because there are those, and they have this idea, well, these are godless people, and whatever rules they make, we have a right to disobey them, because they're not Christians. If they, as I said earlier today, take action and legislate for the good of general society, to protect my fellow citizens, my duty is to love my neighbor as myself, and therefore I must obey those laws for my own benefit and for the benefit of my fellow citizens. And I believe that truth ought to be pressed home, because I do believe there's a growing thinking, a developing thinking in many parts, that if they are not Christian, we can ignore them. We can ignore their laws. We cannot. Paul says, I appeal to Caesar. He may be godless, but he represents the justice that has its fountainhead in God himself, the God of justice. And that is why, as I said earlier today, we have a duty laid upon us to be praying for those who have the rule over us. And we feel them, and we feel God, when we do not pray earnestly for them. Not only that God would convert them, but that he would enable them to exercise legitimate authority and do justice for the people of God as well as others. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless his word.